Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Peter Paul Brazola. We're running a few minutes late, and we're waiting for our caller to call in. So let's see what happens.
Say, Ben, want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the sound?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Neither game's for children, neither game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
where to call up.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrace.
Bet 'em.
Little trades, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your mind.
I'll fold.
I'll fold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Vanyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot!
Politics and poker, politics and poker, play for a pot, that's mediocre. Politics and poker, rubbing neck and neck. If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck. Politics and poker, politics and poker, makes the average
Hello, this is Peter Paul Barzola, and I hope Patrick's on the line here. I don't hear him.
Right here.
Oh, Patrick, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, we had a little thing. How did you like our new thing, Politics and Poker?
Great.
Okay, glad. I'm sorry, we had a little problem. So,
yeah, I was trying for the past 10 minutes to get...
I've got a new phone, so I've got to work out. Okay, well, since we're calling you the new Mike Royko of Chicago journalism, well, you've been around for, what, 45 years?
Well, I wouldn't go quite that far. At least as long as you have.
Well, I'm not that old. Patrick, you remember...
You were a class behind me.
Behind you.
Yes, 1 year.
We don't want to give any secrets over the air. You don't know who's listening.
The entire world is listening.
Oh, that might be a problem. We were both at the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago. Incidentally, Patrick, you are a historian. Did you know that Chicago may be the second city, but it's the first city when there are political campaigns?
Well, I know that we've had more major political conventions here in Chicago than any other single city.
Right. And of
over
course,
the years.
Right. And, of course, one of the most infamous, or I shouldn't say infamous, was the 1952 when Vincent Hallinan of the Communist Party at the old amphitheater. And then there was another one, I think. Wasn't Eisenhower in the – wasn't there a convention in 52?
Yes, there was. Eisenhower was nominated here in 52.
Oh, okay. I was right, because I vaguely as a child remember seeing him. But let's jump forward to 1968. Do you remember the night Walter Cronkite was hosting? And, of course, did you catch the Discovery Channel's biography of him Sunday?
I didn't see the Discovery Channel's biography of Walter Cronkite, but I certainly remember Walter Cronkite's interview with Mayor Daley, where the mayor made a number of interesting observations, such as the police were not there to create disorder, the police were there to preserve disorder.
Well, he had to make the police look good. Well, let's jump back to the assassination of Martin Luther King. Would you agree with me that the Chicago police were caught, no pun intended, flat-footed? They weren't prepared for the demonstrations and the subsequent riot.
I don't think anyone was in any major city. I mean, I think people expected there were going to be demonstrations, there were going to be sporadic incidents of violence. But, you know, this was something. I mean, I know a guy who actually... The first night of the riots, left Washington, D.C. In a plane, and he could see from the air parts of Washington burning. When he arrived in Chicago, he could see, as the plane was coming in, whole sections of the West Side burning. It was an eerie sight, and it's one that, and I'm still in contact with the guy, it's one that he has never forgotten.
Oh, neither would I, neither would us. But now I remember the first part of, well, Walter Cronkite was the major anchor, and Dan Rather was down on the floor in more ways than one.
Right.
And he was roughed up, and he said he was punched in the stomach, and in true journalistic style, he went down broadcasting while on his microphone.
Right.
And Walter Cronkite sitting up there on the dais, or journalist box. Excuse me, I had a slight cold. He said, it looks like we got a bunch of thugs or something like that, and they were referring to the disorders in the street. Do you recall that, the first part of that?
Yeah, I remember Walter Cronkite was reporting on, other things, including what was going on outside the amphitheater. And then he said, it looks like we've got a bunch of thugs right here in the amphitheater. And I guess the camera zoomed in on the police roughing up Rather.
Right, or plainclothesmen, whatever.
Yeah, well, they were clearly police because, as I recall, they were in civilian clothes, but I mean, you could see they were wearing badges on their belts and were carrying sidearms or shoulder holsters.
At least they had badges.
Did have badges, but they were not about to give you the badge number.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, you hear stories like like this Gates case, but I'll get to that a little later. But I remember both of these interviews. Now he had a second interview this time. I mean, he did a second segment on this, and he was interviewing Mayor Daley.
Right.
And now on the Sunday interview, on the Sunday replay of his biography, they ran it twice on Discovery Channel. He said that he was criticized by other media people because he wasn't tough enough on Richard Daley. But what I remember, and of course I was by the lakefront with Allen Ginsberg, who were watching that, and I recall Ginsberg and some of his people talking about putting LSD in the water system.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that Richard Daley heard about this and he freaked. And he also remembered the fact that Chicago police looked bad at during the riots after Martin Luther King's assassination.
Yeah.
And he had Robert Kennedy's assassination, a duel, and he wasn't going to have a repeat of that that made his police look bad, even though they did things that were certainly questionable, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as a matter of fact, the police very often get the blunt end of this. Part of the problem there was lack of proper supervision and lack of training. You know, it's interesting. The demonstrators in Lincoln Park were getting training in nonviolent methods of confrontation. You may remember the week before when these guys were all chanting, Washaw, Washaw, as they were forming lines which supposedly would protect them but would be non-threatening. They were getting some semblance of training. The police apparently figured they could operate pretty much the same way they've been doing over the previous 30 or 40 years, and that was just no longer the case. Like anything else, tactics change, and their leadership failed to give them that kind of training that they needed until after the convention. Then things improved, but that was only after the police unnecessarily got a black eye for the poor planning on the part of their supervisors. The rank-and-file cop was left out there and hung out there to dry. And, yeah, they did all kinds of stupid things, anyone would, with lack of proper direction.
Of course, they gave a few black eyes, but as Daley said, and of course I'm not... I look at Richard Daley like Mike Royko did,
yeah,
in a lot of respects. And I recommend the book, and you can recommend one too, Pat. I think, was it Len O'Connor who wrote a book on Daley? And then, of course, Boss by Mike Royko.
Boss is the classic work on Daley.
Richard the First.
You know, you really, yeah, Richard the First. You really can best get to know Daley by looking through newspapers of that period, Chicago newspapers of that period, because they very often quoted the mayor exactly as he spoke. And it got so bad that the press secretary for the mayor, a guy by the name of Earl Bush at the time, this is before Sullivan took over as the mayor's press secretary.
And he was not related to the president?
He was not related to the Bushes, although he was in a way Bush League. Bush told a bunch of reporters once, don't quote what the mayor says, quote what he means.
And that's open to a lot of interpretation.
It's open to a lot of interpretation, but that was, you know, I mean, everyone knew that this guy was not going to, in the area of public persuasion and oratory, provide serious competition to Winston Churchill or Franklin Roosevelt. He was not FDR, he was Daley. And his press people wanted the press to take that into account and basically sanitize his language. And you know, that just was not going to happen. Just like Richard II, again, is not a great orator by any means. In fact, you can always tell when he's upset because his voice goes up two or three octaves higher.
Oh, you mean?
And he starts, you know, it's like Donald Duck after a while.
That's
you know, especially if you get him on the Olympics, we're going to lose the Olympics. I mean, that's the way he's been talking at press conferences lately, and you can... You know, you can tell if you've covered this man. As soon as he's under stress, this is what happens. When Richie Daley, the first, was under stress, he would come up with things like "We must rise to higher and higher platitudes," or "The police were there to preserve disorder," or his most famous one, "What trees do they plant?"
That one.
yeah. So these guys, I mean, the gift of tongues does not run in that family.
But they certainly have the gift of clout.
They have the gift of clout.
They
use it. I would say the father, in all fairness, I would say the father used his gift of political clout more for the benefit of a larger segment of Chicagoans than the son has. The son has not met a developer he doesn't like. And the father, on the other hand, was very concerned about the neighborhoods. And with him, the Democratic Party was a two-way street. They did for you, but you were expected to do for them, too, on election.
A lot more in some cases.
Yeah, but in this particular case, the current Daley is, although he likes to trade on his father's name and he likes to be the reincarnation of his father when it's convenient, this guy is more interested in the loop, the near north side, Lincoln Park, the neighborhoods immediately south of the loop, the wealthy neighborhoods, as it were.
Yeah, for those who don't know, the loop means downtown Chicago, the old Marshall Field. Is that still there, by the way?
No, it's now Macy's.
Okay. So it's like the still stocking shopping areas, and
yeah.
I guess condos and all that. Do you remember now the one night that I wasn't with you and I wasn't shooting the film, which incidentally I never got the copies back from the processor. I stayed home that night and watched ABC Howard K. Smith. Did you catch that, or did you see a replay of that?
No, I did not.
Well, here's
no,
what happened, and you probably it's accurate. Bill Buckley and Gore Vidal, and Howard K. Smith was the commentator. Bill Buckley, the writer,
right,
and author, and then Gore Vidal, the writer, and there's two opposites. And Buckley looked like he had just come off of Cape Cod, and he was wearing a white seersucker's jacket, as I recall.
Right.
Looked a little florid, and Gore Vidal looked like he was kind of arrogantly detached. And he said something. He called Buckley a crypto-Nazi. And Buckley sputtered and says, "You G.D. faggot." And Howard K. Smith couldn't catch it in time, and he turned red, or it was an F faggot. And I think that's the first time that those F words were used in media. I don't know
if it was the first time, but I did see, not that whole interview, but parts of it much, much later. And it just struck me as a case of two aristocrats at war with one another.
Yeah, that's right. Gore Vidal's father was senator, was a U.S. senator, I think, from Missouri. He was blind, and Gore Vidal, as a youth, used to lead him around, and no pun intended.
Yeah. Well, you know, Gore Vidal, in many ways, was kind of blind, too.
that's why he lives in Italy, he says.
as was William F. Buckley. But the two of them hated each other's guts in some ways, because they were so similar to one another.
Oh, yeah, they were cut from the same silk stocking.
Indeed. And one was trying to be a kind of a spokesman for the people, most of whom he had a disdain for individually. And the other, that would be William Buckley, was trying to defend the Republic, whatever that was, was never particularly interested in that republic ever turning into a democracy.
Oh, yeah. Well, now his son has embraced Obama. Patrick, now, did you catch Obama's press conference, the two questions he took, and then on the health care, his Obamacare, whatever, and then this woman, Lynn Sweet of Chicago? Or Lynette?
Yeah, I know her. She's a sharp lady, generally asks on-target questions, her sister used to work at our papers.
Which is?
The Learner newspapers in Chicago.
Oh, right, but they're no longer.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
What people that I talked to, and I happened to catch it, I thought, well, he's talking about health care, and it's very controversial.
Mm-hmm.
And why is she injecting this Gates case in there? when that's a local matter. Now it's blown up into an international tempest in a teapot. I mean, that's the way I see it. What do you think?
Because I'll tell you why. Because, as I said, I know her. Lynn is never one to pass up an opportunity to ask a question, germane or not, that is going to get her some attention.
Okay, okay.
And I say this with a certain amount of awe because, I mean, I've seen her at work.
Oh, she's a good-looking woman, and you can't compete with that, can you, Patrick?
Well, I certainly can't, but... But the truth of the matter is she's got a sharp mind to match, and the questions that she asks are generally rather germane questions, whether or not they're, you know, in sync with the rest of the line of questioning. She's one that generally likes to get to the point.
Well, that was a pointed question, and after he made that statement, he left the podium. And people are very upset, at least, you know, the people that I talk to and all that. But we don't want to get in that. Patrick, we got a few minutes more, and I'm sorry about the screw-up.
No problem.
Equipment. We'll do this again. And I hope people understand politics and poker. That comes from the Broadway show over 60 years ago, Fiorello, after was a musical biography of Fiorello LaGuardia, the last honest, ethical, competent, funny mayor of New York City. And he succeeded an interesting character named James J. Walker, who was a playboy and Catholic Irish, and he was also a songwriter. He wrote the famous song, "Will You Love Me in December Like You Did in May?" And a lot of politicians are going to be singing that song come next year, I think. But he was fascinating. In fact, there was a movie made with Bob Hope who did his only serious role. It was called Bo James. I highly recommend that film. It's a very good biography of James J. Walker. And in fact, James J. Walker was probably the only New York mayor forced out by a governor. And the governor at the time was FDR because of all the corruption that James J. Walker's people were involved in. He was never convicted of corruption. In fact, he took off on a ship and he left his wife, good Catholic Irish.
He went to Europe.
Yeah, with Betty Comden. And
yeah.
We never saw any more of them. But I understand when he did work, this is interesting about these guys, when he did work, he did provide social services for the people that needed them in New York at the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a reason Jimmy Walker was a popular mayor, because he did deliver for the people. And the extracurricular activities that he was allegedly involved in were really regarded by most people in New York, outside of the Archbishop's residence, as, you know, very human peccadillos. And many people in New York felt the important thing was, can he do the job? And for all of his playboyness, and for all of the time that he spent at the racetrack and other places, he did manage to get a job done.
Yeah, so, well, I guess it's...
He put New York on the map in many ways.
Yeah, I guess it's not how long you're on the job, it's what you get done when you are on the job.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I can understand that, and, you know, if we were to look at a lot of these politicians, half of them wouldn't be in office and would have to pay back their salary. Patrick, a quickie in the next minute or so. Any update on the corruption in Chicago or Cook County?
It continues. you know, there are still people talking about running against Todd Strocher, the county board president who inherited the mantle from his father. It is possible that Congressman Danny Davis, who you, I think, know, Danny Davis is thinking of leaving Congress to run for the county board presidency.
Nobody's running for Burris's seat?
Yeah, there are several people. A guy by the name of Giannoulis.
Oh,
who
boy.
Comes from a wealthy Greek banking family.
Well, yeah. In that song, Politics and Poker, nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
Yeah, but look, we elected Blagojevich.
Blago, yes.
Yes.
Well, what's the story? Is he in court yet?
No, he won't go to trial until next June. In the meantime, I'm sure that he is going to do every talk show that he can get on, and he is going to appear at every comedy club. And I'm not saying that facetiously. He was at, there is a musical, Blago the Musical, playing at Navy Pier. And he attended that about a month ago and took questions from the audience.
Well, maybe they better throw him overboard. Patrick, we will do this again. I'm going to end with Politics and Poker, a little reprise. Thank you for being on the show. You're always entertaining and, more importantly, informative.
And thank you very much. We'll talk very soon.
Take care, Pat.
Bye.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going
to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
Thank you. And we'll be back on Thursday. This is Peter Paul Brizola. Okay. 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 Okay.